Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's episode of the Meltcast. We are episode one of the Big Footy Meltcast. Riz, my friend, how are you? I'm not even going to bother introducing myself. I'm that worked up about what I saw on the weekend that I'm just straight into Grizz. How are you? And tell me what absolutely gave you the shits about the St Kilda game, if you can narrow it down to one thing.
It's fascinating. I sort of half expected to see you with a bag on your head. Just some of those ashamed fans that don't even identify themselves. But a lot's happened in the 4 weeks since we've done a pod together. Bont has had a few guests on since, and I think the last time you were on, we beat Collingwood. So, you know, I blame you personally for not being here, and that's clearly the only reason we're losing. But yeah, it was just, I feel it was 4 weeks of poor form, capitulating week on week on week to what we saw against St Kilda, where I thought the first half was flattering to us and the second half was a much more realistic view of where we're at, particularly as a team and as a lineup, but perhaps the wake-up call you needed as a club, considering what we've been hearing spat out from the club in the meantime.
Yeah, you're right. And look, I have said to you off air that I don't have much to talk about from Saturday, because the reality is we got pantsed all around the ground. You know, Draper got destroyed by Marshall comprehensively, I thought, which isn't, you know, all that unusual at the moment. Draper does seem to be struggling a little bit. Peter Wright, next to, you know, was basically non-existent. Nate Caddy struggled. You know, it's hard for a young forward and delivery is rubbish, so he struggled. You know, I thought again that Dersmer and Durham and even Shield to a certain degree, you know, they battled hard, but just, yeah, it was just shit. It really was just shit. So yeah, that's my take of the game from Saturday.
Yeah, look, I think we had a 37% disposal efficiency going inside 50. So to give you an idea how easy it is to get an efficient inside 50 is if it's a kick over 40 meters and it's not marked by the opposition, it's an effective disposal, or if you hit a target. So the fact that we're at 37% just sort of shows you how terrible we were going inside 50 when that is the metric. It's such a low bar for an effective disposal inside 50. And, you know, our uncontested possessions were well down. They did a really good job mechanically. Just, I know you don't want to talk about the game, but just mechanically stopped us from moving the ball down through uncontested possession chains. We only took 100 marks for the game and 95 uncontested marks, which, you know, our game is that sort of kick mark running style. And, you know, they just pounce us everywhere from disposals to clearances to hit it. Oh, I thought we marginally beat clearances, but I felt like they were far more efficient in how they scored from their clearances. It was just, like you said, it was a comprehensive beating. And I know you said that Durham tried hard and Dersmer. I think Dersmer and Durham were really the only two that you could say had a good enough game. Dylan Shield kicked a couple goals, but they were opportunistic. He had one clearance, Dylan Shield. Like, I'm sorry, you're in the team for that sort of for that role when you have one clearance. You know, Jake String had eight, but, you know, I can't think of, except maybe a goal, one good thing Jake String did. Like, a lot of empty stats is probably the best way I can put this game for a few players, and not many players had good stats. So for me, the biggest worry, and we can probably move off this game, I know you don't want to talk about it too much, but we can probably just move off this game and talk more generally, that the big worry for me is that we're picking teams which I think are safe. I think Brad Scott has a history, particularly in North Melbourne, of picking experienced teams that he knows what he's going to get out of them. But for me, with the exception of, you know, maybe Merritt, Dersmer, Durham, I can't say that our senior players, and when I talk about senior players, I mean your Dyson Heppel, who we've clipped a few. He's probably on the edges of the best team at the moment, but Jordan Ridley's been down. Mason Redmond had an absolute mare on the weekend. Darcy, you know, this is his first week back. It's hard to grade him with no VFL form. Ben McKay's been down the last month. Jade Gresham has been non-existent for a few weeks. You know, Draper, as you said, you know, I think with Draper, like, he's 26 years old. He has to be considered a senior member of this team, and he's just not good enough. It's just Peter Wright, I think people have taken chunks out of him, and it's justified with how he's played. Just senior players in this team, the guys that you expect to push the rest of the team forward, just aren't performing.
Yeah, then that's a fair point. And look, you sort of branched into two topics that I want to talk about. And I'll start with the first one here, mate. And that is Brad Scott and his selections. And then it's probably an Essendon culture as well. So Essendon the last 2 years have debuted three players. So we've had three debutants. The next lowest is Carlton at four and Port Adelaide at four. But other than that, you look at Brisbane's debuted five. Nobody else has debuted less than seven. So every other club's debuting more players than us. If you expand it to players that debuted for the club, so I'm talking about the Dersmers and the Goldsteins who have come across, we are second only to Carlton. So Carlton have had seven players debut for the club. We've had nine over the last 2 years. So that does lead to your point there about Brad Scott playing it safe. And I also have issues with his selections there. So for example, let's look at Peter Wright for starters here. Peter Wright was dropped after the game against Melbourne. Now, I thought that was pretty rough on Peter Wright at the time because at the time he had kicks, yep. You know, six or seven goals in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Actually hadn't looked that bad. Then all of a sudden got a game that was just not to his liking at all. It was a horrible game for him. He didn't perform well, which you probably could have predicted given the weather. We then dropped him for what was I thought was an insane decision inside the dome there against Adelaide because I actually thought, well, you know, that's the game. They'll get him a bit of confidence again. You know, we'll get him some confidence. We drop him. He doesn't play VFL because there's no VFL. He doesn't have to prove himself. He doesn't have to do anything to come back into the team because the next week he's immediately put back in the side. What was the point of dropping him? Like, what message are we sending to players out there? Because the argument around Nick Bryan not getting a game is that, well, he's just not physical enough. He's just not shown enough at VFL. I mean, Nick Bryan's dominating VFL. So, you know, if he's not shown at a VFL, he's probably at the moment, he's probably never going to show. But how do you think someone like him looks at that and goes, well, I'm not getting games because I'm not doing something. He got games, didn't do it, got dropped, didn't have to improve it, and got straight back in. I mean, is that not a little bit insane to you?
I thought Peter Wright was emblematic. I don't have an issue with dropping Peter Wright. I don't have an issue with bringing Peter Wright back, but not in consecutive weeks, not when there's no VFL form in the middle. But he wasn't performing well generally, I thought.
And it's the same with Heppel too, because we dropped Heppel.
Yeah, the same deal.
We dropped Heppel.
No, exactly.
Didn't play VFL, didn't have to earn his stripes, just came straight back into the side.
Now, it's hard when VFL have a bye. I just want to check you on two things. Oh, just on one thing. So you mentioned the list of debutants. I do want to just say one thing. In 2021, 2022, we had seven debutants in each of those years, which would have been fourth in 2021 and I think second or third in 2022. So I would suggest that the reason we don't have as many debutants is because we debuted a lot of them in those previous years, guys like Perkins, Cox. Yeah, so third in 2022, Perkins, Cox, Reed, you know, Sartis, Hobbs, all these guys, or Hobbs probably more specifically. And when you look at the drafts from the last 2 years, it was, you know, Hobbs in 2022 draft was Sartis who debuted, Davey who debuted, Lewis Hayes who hasn't, who probably should have, and Jaden Davey who really hasn't shown that much of AFL level. And then last year's draftees are...
Who should have got a game?
Yeah,
well, I still hold a candle that says that someone like Patrick Voss should have got a game last year when our forward line was out of form and he was kicking 12 in four games.
The point I'm trying to make is that like we debuted a lot of players in those 2021-22 years that might have been held over from Carlton, for example, who might be about debuting this year, but it's neither here nor there in the sense that I agree with your general premise that the selections don't make a lot of sense at the moment. I thought as soon as we dropped Heppel, and you and I have been probably his last couple of torchbearers on the board, it couldn't be 1 week with no VFL and bring straight back in. If you're saying you're not good enough and we're moving on, then it has to be, like, for selection integrity, he has to earn his stripes back. And the same with Peter Wright. I don't have a problem with dropping Peter Wright, but... You know, show, hey, look, senior players, you're not performing, earn your stripes back. And the bigger thing, and I mentioned this last week with Darrow, I think I get accused of being a parish apologist a lot. And I do like Darcy, but I was saying last week he had no business coming straight back into the team over Sartis and Hobbs.
Like, well, even over Setterfield. I mean, Will Setterfield,
yeah, even any of the three. Perfect. Any of those three deserved on VFL form to come in over Darcy. I don't understand. And you saw Darcy on the weekend, had a couple of good touches, but 13 disposals, largely inefficient, ineffective. And he just looked short of a gallop, which makes sense because he's had 10 weeks off. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing I wanted to touch on, Grizz, which we're sort of leading to now, because we're talking about the fact that Setterfield and Sardis and Hobbs can't get games there and should have come instead of Parrish. Something else we do quite regularly is we take square plugs and try and fit them into round holes. We have this history of trying to get players to be, and Dan 26, I don't know if you've read the post, but he made a very good point during the week that we as a club try to get everybody to be able to do everything. We try to improve everything overall. We don't focus on what we're good at and let them just be good at what they're good at. They always have to be developing something else, which is something like a club like Hawthorn don't do. And his point actually was, take Massimo D'Ambrosio, for example. He's an elite kick. Hawthorn have brought him in to be an elite kick, and that's all they want him to do. They don't care about the defensive side, which is why we got rid of him, supposedly, was because he just didn't defend, which, you know, is still madness. But you look at Setterfield, at Hobbs, you look at Sardis, right? And they can't get a game at the moment. Meanwhile, we're still running Jake Stringer in the midfield. And Jake, I've loved Jake in there as a burst player, but he's clearly not up to it this year. It's not his one wood. And it seems to be, we seem to be going to him to try and get him to make his one wood. Meanwhile, as you pointed out, we've got Sardis, Hobbs and Setterfield, who are all inside midfielders, sitting in the VFL twiddling their thumbs because we're trying to shove somebody who's not a midfielder into the midfielder. And this isn't a Brad Scott thing. This is an Essendon thing. I mean, we saw it, you know, when we had Langford through the midfield and Laverde through the midfielder, and you know, now, and, I mean, yeah, this one does fall on Scott, but Nick Martin going back, despite the fact that he was one of the best wingmen in the game last year. You know, we've got this history of we just try and make players become everything, or we try and develop these players instead of just letting them play to their fucking strengths. The problem with Stringer at the moment is you play Stringer in the mid at the forward line, then all of a sudden you got Langford, Stringer, Wright, and arresting Ruckman and Caddy. And it's way too tall. So
and Jones, who's rotating off a ring.
So it feels like we're trying to. Yeah. It feels like what we've done here is we've just tried to shove Stringer in the middle because we don't have any other way to fit him inside. Where the reality is, unfortunately, he just gets dropped. Like it's just that simple. If there's not a spot for him in the team, just drop him. Don't keep playing him in the midfield in the hopes that he's going to become that burst player that dragged us to the finals in 2021. Because it just hasn't happened.
I have a different take on Stringer, and for me, Stringer's one of those senior players who are underperforming. He's one of those guys. There's eight players from the weekend that if you dropped, it would bat an eyelid. Jake Stringer is one of them. But my thing is, when you use him in the centre bounce, you should be using him there as a point of difference, not a staple. And we're using him as a staple, which means we're blunting his effect. Jake Stringer going in the midfield in for a centre bounce twice a quarter has shock effect because it throws out the opposition planning. When he's in there for half of them, they know what to expect. And it gasses his tank for when he's forward because he's running around the midfield and he's just not that type of athlete. But my bigger problem is I see what Brad Scott's trying to do, but I feel like his decision-making is all wrong. So throwing Nick Martin back, I understand the point of we've lost Ridley for the first half of the year. Let's get a good kick behind the ball. But I would suggest throwing another lockdown defender behind them and freeing Redmond up and allowing Martin to stay on the wing was the better option. I would have thought, for example, if you want some explosiveness through the midfield, or you want then throwing Martin through centre bounce occasionally and keeping Stringer forward and just, you know, maybe dropping a ruckman or a key forward, and having Nick Cox as your backup ruck gives you the explosiveness around the ground, but also evens you up elsewhere. You know, bringing Parrish in made sense because when Caldwell went down, or bringing in a midfielder, I should say, made sense again because when we lost Caldwell against Adelaide in the last quarter, we were short of a midfielder. But you brought in a guy who hadn't played 10 weeks instead of any of the three guys that were running around getting 25 touches and 10 clearances in the VFL. The process isn't – it just seems like he has – I understand his logic, but his execution is just all over the shop. And even like with this such a tall team, like we've got Caddy, Wright, Draper, Jones, Stringer, Langford, and Cox. Like no one, like St Kilda are one of the best teams from rebounding the ball from D50 to forward 50 of any team this season. They just haven't been able to put on the scoreboard. No wonder they put on a score against us. Like, they, as soon as the ball hit the deck, we were way too tall. And I just don't understand what we're doing from a setup point of view. I don't understand in isolation, all his moves make sense except for the person he's bringing in. And then when you put it all together, it just doesn't make sense as a collective. Like, I just wonder, like, what are we doing with Dylan Scheel? Like, the theory is he's going to go at the end of the year. That's what most people think. Why is he playing? If you're talking to us about eight-year plans and the long build, why are you putting a guy like Dylan Scheel in there who's going to be gone next year over Sartis and Hobbs? Yep. Like, nothing makes sense as a collective. It all makes sense individually, but none as a collective. Yep. And that's
the sum of the parts total of the last 20 years, really.
Yeah, it's the sum total of the last 20 years. Like, every individual thing you can justify, but when you throw them all together in a pot, you just get this big pot of blah, which, like, what are we doing? And
because the argument at the moment is, well, we can't play these young kids because they're not ready. But the reality is our VFL team's crap. So
are the senior players doing, Bont? Like, are you going to tell me that the senior players in the AFL are doing what Brad Scott's asking to do?
I fully agree with you, Chris. So my question, when people go, well, they're just not ready. We can't play them. They're just not ready. They're young. They're not ready. Are they ever going to be ready playing in a VFL team that gets belted every second week? The reality is no, because they're getting beaten by guys that aren't AFL quality. So you got to test them against the AFL quality. That's where they learn. The only reason you don't play the kids because they're not ready is if your side is going to challenge for a flag, and I think everyone agrees that we aren't going to challenge for a flag, but you do touch on 20 years, Grizz, of the football club. So let me ask you this, and, you know, I expect you to answer it, and that way we can take it to the club and everything will be solved, and you'll be carried down the street of Napier Street to Windy Hill when we win the flag. What the fuck happens in the back half of the season to the Eston Football Club? Because this is not the first time this has happened under a coach. So we come out all guns blazing, we plateau in the middle, and then we just completely fuck off in the last couple of months. It happened it happened under Knight, it's happened under Hurd, it's happened under Woosher, it's happened under Truck, it's now happening under Brad Scott. Now, this year you could argue, well, it's because we had an easier draw at the start of the year and getting a bit more. But, I mean, the Melbournes, the Adelaides and St Kildas of the world aren't flying. So it's not like we've run into 1, 2, and 3 and have dropped games we should probably drop. We all went into those games thinking we're going to win them. So what is it? Because it's not – everyone's going, well, it's a Brad Scott problem. It's not a Brad Scott. This isn't a Brad Scott thing. This is a cultural thing. So save us from ourselves and tell us how we fix this problem.
Well, I feel like
– and I've got – put no pressure on you at all by telling you.
Yeah, no. So I subscribe, and I know Ant's big on this, but I subscribe to the theory that we don't recruit well generally, but specifically, we don't recruit athletes with endurance base. So when you look at Melbourne and you look at Hawthorn and you look at Melbourne, like when they won a flag, they drafted and they recruited for tight. You had to be able to tackle, and you had to have a good engine, and you know, you have to be competitive, and we'll teach you to kick. And they build a team around a group of players that were just this brutal, dogged, contested possession, defensive-minded team that had a few sprinkling of attacking, explosive superstars. Hawthorn, if you can't kick, you don't play. And for about 8 years there, they were the best kicking team in the competition.
And they're going for it again, too. That's what they're doing.
And they're going for it again. And so this idea of you can't kick, you can't play. You know, we look a lot faster when we have the ball for 70% of the game and they don't. And so they recruit to a type and they fit to it. Whereas I feel like none of the pieces we select seem to fit together, or they overlap. And there's no single identifiable way that we're trying to build a team. And I feel like Brad Scott's tried to build a team with the players he has, but it's a game plan that doesn't stand up because of the obvious deficiencies of the list. I've been saying for 2 years now, we're going to have to turn over 40% of this list, honestly. Like, and there's a bunch of players now that if we're going to be successful in 3 or 4 years, won't be there.
But Chris, I just ask, do you subscribe? I know I've mentioned this to you before, and I think you have agreed with me in the past. As a recruiting model, we tend to just grab pieces and worry about how they'll fit later rather than actually going, okay, we rather than identifying a need and going out and getting it, we just take whatever we can get and we'll go, fuck it, we'll work it out on the back end. And we, and which is almost impossible to do, as we've seen at the moment, because we're shoving so many tools in the forward line because we've gone out and got a whole heap of similar style players.
Well, I would suggest that that's what you should do with your premium assets. Just go get the most talented players you can. But what we haven't done is, if you look at our draftees, our first and second draftees generally have a pretty good hit rate. But it's third, fourth rookie. Like, rookie, we've hit some, we've hit, you know, mid-season and post-rookie, we've hit some good pots of gold there. But we've also had some misses. And the really good clubs make use of picks 40 onwards. They recruit a type of player and they just spend 2 years developing them. When's the last time a third or a fourth round pick worked out for us? I honestly cannot remember. That's where you need to draft a type and have a good development system. That's where you draft your defensive runners that have limited skills, that are dogged defenders, that you just, you find five of them, like Sydney do. Everyone raves on about Sydney's academy selections, and I'm not going to, you can and you can't, but one thing they do is they absolutely maximize back end of the draft and their rookie list. They've got, almost a dozen rookie lists or round three or four drafted players on their list. Why? Because they draft a type. They draft aerobic runners that tackle and they can get up and down the field and defend and attack it. And we just don't do that. We haven't been able to find a style or a recruiting niche and an ability to develop these players in a way which rounds out your list so you're not, 15 deep. And if those 15 elite players aren't on, you get what you get on the weekend against St Kilda.
You're talking about our late draft picks. I'm just having a quick look now. I would say Guelphy at 76 in 2017, Zerk Thatcher at 66 in 2017. Other than that, I am scrolling back a long way to say maybe Mitch Brown and Michael Hartley in the back end of the 2015 draft, which is a long time for not being able to nail those late picks, as you said.
We're talking Garrett McDonoughs and Alistair Lords, and we're talking
Kobe Muchers, Dylan Clarks, Trent Minots.
Yeah, so
Noah Gown.
Yeah. Good clubs, say you have eight selections in 4 years, good clubs will nail three or four of them. And that's three or four best 25 players that you've got that fill a role. And that's, I think, what Dan D6 was talking about before. Just do your role. You don't have to be good at everything. Do what you do well. And we don't have those players. And it's because we haven't drafted and developed for them. And it's because, we've been raving on a lot about this. I do think that there is an element of Brad Scott that's trying to do that.
Yeah, so do I.
You can't build Rome in a day.
No, absolutely. I think Brad Scott is definitely the man to coach us at the moment. I'm not even going to mention the stupid calls that we've seen post-game about who should be coaching us. I think Brad Scott is the right man to do it, and you're right. I don't think Rome gets built in a day, and I think he's working towards it. I just think at the moment he's got caught up trying to chase that finals position, which is fine because for a long point we were up to it, but I think now we're out of it. We need to abandon that and start trying to play some of these younger players.
Yeah, I also think that when we were performing well, he could justify, well, the young guys don't just walk into a team that's winning. Yep. They've got to show that they can, do what we're asking them to do at VFL level and then come in. But I don't think there's seven or eight players on the weekend that you could drop and I wouldn't bat an eyelid. And if you're not willing to do, if you're going to lose four games straight and you're not going to clearly commit to what Brad Scott wants, and by all reports, Brad Scott's been seething with them the last 3 weeks. At some point, words are just words and you make a statement with selection. And if you bring in, drop three or four guys this week and bring in three or four young guys and just, and make a statement that way, that's fine, just as long as they don't bounce straight back out the week after. What I want to see is not necessarily who's in or out over the next 4 weeks, although I would like to see a few more debutants. I'd like to see, one last look at Wanganeen if we're going to move him on, just to see if we have something there as a halfback. I'd like to see Jaden Davey. I would like to see Archie Roberts. I would like to see Lewis Hayes. I'd like to see Sars and Hobbs back at some point. What I want to see is what happens the first 2 weeks when we have seen some roster changes and some list management, because that's going to tell me how serious Brad Scott and this club is.
Yeah, look, and you did say before we're probably hit the last defenders of him. If Dyson Heppel goes around again, I'm just about to, he can't go around again. All that talk about whether or not he'll go around again, they can't be serious. Like, he just, you know, we said that at this point last year too with him. We said, oh, he can't go around again, and then he went around again, and we sort of got back on board the bandwagon because he was all right for the first half of the year, but the back half again, he's tired, his body's not doing what he wants, and he's not the player he was. And we're going to have an Essendon player who look, champion's a strong word, and he's probably not quite an Essendon champion as such, but he's been a very good player for a very long time, did a lot of things for us, and he will be booed relentlessly, I think, until he retires now, and that's just a sad way for him, his career to end.
Yep.
Quick touch on the Fremantle game. We will turn up.
I hope so. If they don't, after the last month they've had, and by all reports, Scott's been pretty seething behind the scenes, and so is a couple of senior players. If they don't, then I'd have serious concerns. But I think Fremantle will win. I think it's Fremantle's by 5 goals is probably a good result at this point.
Yeah, no, I think you've tipped that beautifully. I agree. I would like us to be honest. It's the kind of game I think we win, which. It's just the Essendon thing to do. Just turn up and win a game they shouldn't have no right to win. And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, who knows? Our finals are not gone yet, but I would say that we're in a fair amount of strife trying to chase finals. But that's it for me. Grizz, do you have anything else you want to touch on quickly, mate? Or you're happy with? Well, you're not happy, but you're satisfied with getting a few things off your chest.
Yeah, I hope finals isn't what we're gunning for as a club, because. You know, we've got to win 3 of the last 4 games to have a chance. I don't see that happening with our draw. I just want to see over the next month, you know, proof of where we're going. If this really isn't a long-term plan, I want to start seeing some fruit of that at selection, you know, and on game day. But, yeah, rough week, but we're on to the next one.
Right, yeah, so that's all for us this week, guys. So, as always, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends about the podcast.